You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode 24. This episode...
Have you seen this boy?
Welcome, everyone, to today's installment of the Green Lantern Corps. I'm your host, Frank Mateo. Give you thrills and chills of the Green Lantern world. Joining me today are Kuhan, the precocious little scamp of the group, Colton, fueled by the powers of evil and the ever-living, Brandon West, the fleet-footed Scarlet Avenger, P-Ving, the strongest warrior in the universe, and Eric. This is how he sees all the time, every day. This is how he sees everything.
Kuhan's grown now.
Yeah.
He's still the smallest one.
He's all grown up.
he can't drink in most states, so he's not exactly.
In most states.
He can only vote and die for his country.
Ooh, and buy cigarettes.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're a citizen, I assume.
And porn.
All right, so today we're going to be discussing Brightest Day number 20, Green Lantern Corps number 7, and Green Lantern number 62. But first off, we're going to start off with a bit of news. Now, February 21st, marked the death of Dwayne McDuffie. And so that all of you know, he was a driving force behind such things as Static Shock, Justice League Unlimited, Teen Titans, Ben 10, and also the recently released All-Star Superman. His death is a tragedy, and our hearts go out to his family. He will be greatly missed for all of his work that had touched us all over the years. He also co-founded Wildstorm Entertainment, was the creator of Icon. He was also the creator of Static Shock, right? Before it became
He created Milestone, and Milestone co-created Static Shock within Milestone.
I think you should mention the whole John Stewart thing, the fact that, and relevant to us,
of course,
he also practically recreated the character of John Stewart from the ground up, and made him the most, visible Green Lantern of the past, decade.
Wes, do you want to say your move?
I was laying down under my van, and I got a text from Andrew, and he's like, Dwayne McDuffie died. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Seriously. So I'm like,
Andrew posted on Facebook.
On the internet.
Andrew posted on Facebook, and I got a Facebook message from my phone, because I get Facebook messages from Andrew on my phone. And he posted it on Facebook, and I'm like, oh, wait, what? And it was during my birthday. Wait, what?
Yeah, I got the text from him too. That's how I found out. I just looked it up immediately because, it's so shocking. You want to make sure that it's not some kind of horrible joke,
It's actually something that I received during work, which I was completely, sideswiped by it.
Yeah.
I was actually told by one of my coworkers why I was taking it so hard. And I was actually telling him, literally this guy, I grew up watching most of this guy's works, reading most of this guy's works. It hit hard. He was a shaper of who I am today.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, DC output in the past, decade, it's shaped by this guy. And we're talking about, the freaking Justice League Unlimited, which is one of the best, if not the best iterations of DC Comics of all time.
Good memories.
And the fact that the guy is, universally responsible for it. I mean, almost entirely responsible for it his own creatively. I mean, come on. He's it's amazing.
It's 22-23 years in comics.
I was really sad that I didn't recognize his name, but I definitely recognize his work. I mean, I picked up Icon when it came out, and I loved Static Shock when it was on the air, and I don't know.
I mean, it's stunning.
It made me very, very sad that it took something like this for me to recognize his name, and I think that's sad.
We talk a lot about, at least I mentioned on the cast, I know a lot of people agree with me, some of us anyway, that we talk about racial equivalency in comics and stuff and just just representing the people who read comics more visibly in comics. And Dwayne McDuffie was, definitely the strongest, proponent of that. I mean, just you know, the guy, I mean, the guy changed the industry, you know, I mean, that's just straight up what he did, you know, there's no way to argue, you know, and just, I mean, come on, Static Shock, it's unbelievable how successful Static Shock is. I mean, people really don't understand, you know, I mean, you get dumb crap like John Stewart saying stay black, you know, and like, it's like false progression, you know, when Dwayne McDuffie was like, no, let's just do it right, you know.
Wait, what was it, the teenage Negro?
Oh, yeah, his most famous joke from, like, you know, yeah, years ago, Teenage Mutant Negro Thrashers or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, as I said before, he would be greatly missed. He'd be greatly missed. In lighter news.
In more wacky, zany news.
Now, more figures have been released to the public of the Alien Green Lanterns for the Green Lantern movie. Now, mind you, we still do not know if have confirmation as to whether or not these lanterns will be featured in the movie or not. But if you're fans of Nora Chavez and Nakelai or Vaz and Green Man, well, you're definitely going to be in luck.
You three guys who know Nora Chavez is. Two other guys who are fans of...
Wait, they're making a Nora Chavez figure? Oh my god, I gotta buy that one like today.
They're making a Nora Chavez figure. Now, if those guys sound alien to you, I suggest you actually look those guys up. Those actually have been portrayed in many Green Lantern tales of the Green Lantern story.
That's why.
And also Toy Fair released a picture of a dual set of Hal Jordan and a figure named Krona Parallax. Now, that's actually something actually to think about, seeing that, you know, if anyone knows Parallax and Krona in a mixture combined as such as this for the Green Lantern movie, for a figure of the Green Lantern movie, we can only ponder what the hell's going to actually happen.
I'm excited for Hyper Hammer Hal Jordan.
Yeah, those toys are super cool. I think you didn't mention the most important of all toys, which is the Halloween Pale Green Lantern they're selling. Are you kidding me with this nonsense? That's amazing. Like, I already bought three and it hasn't even come out yet. It's amazing.
You guys, do you think Hal will go all green in the movie, like in these figures?
Yeah, obviously they're like just not right, obviously. But, I think it's, I mean, obviously the figures, we get a first good look at Krona. I mean, I guess, you know, We knew that Krona's gonna be in the movie, I guess, from other stuff, but it's pretty cool.
Is he the one with the weird alien head?
He's the what's it called? A little blue, what are they called? Guardians? Have you heard of these?
Well, no, there's the Guardians with there's one Guardian here that's got a weird, like, Megamind head.
No, that's not Krona. No, that's
the
not
only
Krona.
And the toys, I believe the only Guardian toy they've released images of so far is Krona. He's got little chains on and stuff.
Okay, so that is Krona. So he's wearing chains and he has a Megamind head.
That is not Krona, damn it!
No, that's the General Ganthet, like.
Then why is he wearing chains?
No, the toy you're looking at, that's Krona.
That's the ghost of Krona.
The toy you're looking at is Krona. I mean, it's...
No, like, it's not Krona.
It's not Krona.
Okay, what is...
You sure?
I am posting the image in this chat. Who is this? Yeah.
That is Ganthet. I don't see
why is he wearing chains?
No, that's Krona because there's a box. What is, look at the other pictures. There's a box of that toy in a box and it says Krona. The Mad Guardian or the Lost Guardian or whatever.
It may say Krona, but he is not Krona. Krona is like 7 feet tall and has a goatee.
Maybe all that height is forehead.
Well, technically, look, mind you, audience, even though, you know, you cannot see the pictures that we're seeing now, if you actually go look it up.
I'll put them in the show notes or whatever.
You can actually see a Guardian with, what looks to be yellow energy handcuffs or you know, shackles.
Yeah.
So technically, it can honestly be a Guardian, in shackles by a yellow energy creature or whatever.
Eric is adamant that this is Krona.
If you look at the other pictures from Toy Fair, there's a box. There's like a character box that has that exact toy in it with the chains, and it says Krona, the Lost Guardian.
Like, all right. So
I'm just saying this, Krona.
Again, the cast is, you know, split in two here. You know, most of us don't actually believe this.
Which is funny, because this is a fact, and we don't know the answer to
Do I get a chance to make the completely out-of-left-field comment that this Hal Jordan Parallax figure reminds me of the Tick versus the Uncommon Cold?
And by
violator.
In left field, completely out of left field. Bing comes in with the, Tick reference.
For yeah.
You know, I try. I gotta bring something to the show.
Sapsucker Frog.
Alright, so,
I'm excited that every figure is coming with a free ring.
That's a really cool idea. I think that Parallax design is really strange too, because it didn't look like the Parallax design we've seen before. It's just like a little fat dude.
Well, I think, is it Parallax Krona? Cause then maybe just slightly different, cause it's Krona.
I'm totally okay with the toys looking like Green Man and Vaz not looking anything like their counterparts. I mean, it seems like blasphemous, but I think that's totally fine. No problem with it whatsoever.
Well, I can say not Kaylui doesn't look anything like I want him to look.
What is F Sharp Bells? Everybody knows
Rod Lapin.
Yeah, he looks exactly like his comic counterpart, and that's pretty awesome.
Well, to move on from the figures news, February 14th saw the release of the trailer for the movie release game Green Lantern Rise of the Manhunters. You can check out the trailer on GameTrailers.com, DCComics.com, and GreenLanternCorps.com. The trailer is a pure cinematic, but if it's any indications as to what we'll be seeing gameplay-wise,
it's clearly not that. It is like
be able to see what kind of constructs you're going to create, et cetera.
Maybe.
Well, did you see the screenshots? There were a couple screenshots released.
Screenshots, that's right.
But the trailer we got is like 40% of a cutscene.
Right, it's pure cinematic, as I said before.
I think it's the opening cinematic, and not even the whole opening cinematic.
It's probably going to be it's going to be heavily edited as like a partial cinematic. I think you're right.
Because they just sort of says, oh, are they robots? Yeah, the Guardians created them, and they fight.
Yeah.
Although I did not know before this trailer that Ryan Reynolds was going to be voicing Hal Jordan. I figured they were just going to get somebody kind of sounded like Ryan Reynolds.
Well, they've yet to cast Kilowog, right? I mean,
well, apparently it's Kevin Michael Richardson.
I guess in the game, no way in the movie.
I don't know. I hope it's him in the movie because he's a competent voice actor.
I think Frankie should do it, and I'm going to maintain that till the day I die.
Of course, but they're not going to hire him out of nowhere.
Because they're animals.
Well, I'm glad I have your support. I'm glad I have your support, Eric.
Just you, but a little, down a bit? Yeah, come on.
Are you kidding? He's perfect as is for Kilowog.
Maybe a little gruffer.
All right, so now we're going to...
Perfect.
I do want to say really quick that I don't know, I liked it a lot. If that's what the movie's going to look like, and even if it's any indication of what the movie's like.
He means the movie.
If the game trailer is any indication of what the movie's going to like, it looks awesome. It is a little weird to see Sinestro using a Gatling gun.
It was still cool.
It
looked great.
And Hal looked like an asshole just throwing little jizz balls at everybody.
It looked very realistic. Like, I actually believe that it was, he wasn't smug enough to be Ryan Reynolds, which is what tipped me off. But
he didn't look enough like Kyle Rayner for it to be Ryan Reynolds for you.
For a second, I almost believe that it was, that they just filmed something.
Alright, now I know we announced that Nathan Fillion just 2 weeks ago was casted for the animated movie. But, yesterday, February 23rd, we saw the release of the preview trailer for the much-anticipated Emerald Knights, the animated tie-in movie for Green Lantern. The trailer follows the tale of Mauricio Rapp's first day on duty as Green Lantern, learning from, example, true and green members of the Green Lantern Corps, such as Hal Jordan, Lyra, and Abin Sur. The animated movie is stated to be released June 7th, 2011, and be sure to catch a sneak peek at thegreenlanterncorps.com. Now, the trailer itself actually... blends well. It's actually a good, sneak preview trailer that's showing us pretty much the same animation style that we come to know from, First Flight. Pretty much having the exact same animation style, except for Abin Sur, who looks a little bit, toned down from what he looked like in First Flight.
He doesn't have, eight horns on his face.
Thankfully,
I love First Flight more than anything, so anything that looks
Not enough name for Fillion, I don't think. I think it needs a lot more Nathan Fillion.
He didn't sound as good as I wanted, but I'm sure.
No, I agree. I'm sure it would sound
better. I love Nathan Fillion. Captain Tightpants is he's fantastic, but watching that trailer, that's all I could hear was Nathan Fillion, and I really kind of wanted to tell Jordan. Does that make sense?
No, it does.
Because, Jason Isaacs sounded great as Sinestro. I had to, kind of strain my ears
There's nothing you can do to please the fans.
I tell you the truth, though. Jason Isaacs just sounded like Jason Isaacs to me. I mean, I'm still bitter about not being Victor Garber. I mean, come on. Yeah, I mean, he just sounded like... I was like, oh, hey, Jason Isaacs. Wait a second, Jason Isaacs. That's supposed to be Sinestro. And that was all I said when I was watching it. It was only a minute and a half, but I did say that. I it's funny because it reminds me of anybody, I don't know if anybody hopefully didn't, but watch the what's it called? Attack of Brainiac, directed video movie they put out a few years ago.
Yeah, I saw that movie and I didn't like it.
It was horrible. And it had like a lot of the same voice actors and a lot of the and exact same animation style as Superman the Animated Series, except it had nothing to do with it. And this reminds me of it because I love First Flight so much that like, I was so excited when I saw the characters and I was like, oh, it's First Flight, but it clearly isn't the same continuity, which is fine. I mean, what are you gonna do?
I'm really looking forward to it.
I think it looks great.
I think it looks great, but I was really excited. I thought it was done really well, but you guys hyped up Henry Rollins and he fucking sucks.
Yeah, nothing special about that. I just like Henry Rollins. He doesn't sound anything like Kilowog.
He sounds like a
asshole.
Normal guy walking down the street. No gruff, no nothing. It was just some guy.
Sounds
awful.
That's right. Yeah, nothing special.
You guys hyped up Henry Rollins and it was terrible.
It's like, you said that like we took Christmas away.
We were just shocked you didn't know who he was. I mean,
yeah, I still don't. I recognize his face. I know who he is when I see him. I just don't know what he's done with his life.
You know what? I want
to remind me to send you his duet with Shatner.
You know how they're doing? So they said that one of the stories, I mean, I think we said this last week, but one of the stories they're doing is the Mogo story. And I don't know if I really comment on it. I don't really like that. I mean,
It's not. We still don't know whether or not it actually is the Mogo story. We just know the Buffalang or whatever, the Roddy Roddy Piper, in the movie.
Bruce Timm
has actually confirmed it's the Mogo story.
He did. Bruce Timm said we're doing the Mogo story, so one of the stories is the Mogo story. Yeah.
Alright, so Mogo doesn't socialize. It's actually a story.
Yeah, the exact same story. It's kind of like if you, I don't know, what's the point? It seems, I don't know. I don't even like that story, really. You know what's funny about that story is the beginning and end of that story is even better than the story itself, because Tomar Ray makes a point to tell Arisia, like, there's some lanterns that are so small that they literally can't go to the meetings, and there's some that are so big because they're just thought constructs. And that's amazing. And then you just have one that's the size of a planet. It's like, that's not really as interesting as the guy who's a fucking thought construct. I'm sorry. Like, that guy's awesome. The planet guy's just kind of slightly cool, you know. But let's have a, I don't know how they're going to do a story about a thought construct. But
wait, what? You were saying that you really enjoy First Flight and you were happy to see the designs and stuff. I am so disappointed. You know, I think
really?
two weeks ago we were talking about this and I said that I was a big fan of Batman Gotham Knight, which had, you know, what was five different art styles from five different directors. And here I think you got two directors, Lauren Montgomery and Sam Liu. And
half a good directing team, yeah.
And we get the same freaking style all through. I guess that makes for a better continuity and easier to sell to people, but I'm just so disappointed. I was really looking forward to seeing some diverse looking things, and I wasn't huge on First Flight. I thought it was okay, nothing special. And the designs are just meh, you know, nothing to even wink an eye at.
They probably plan to get more directors involved, and it probably was a cost thing, honestly. You gotta assume Batman Gotham Knights is relatively expensive considering you gotta pay, like, two or three of those directors are actually pretty well-known animation directors in Japan, so they still are shipping them off different animation houses, and at least one or two of the stories are gonna look pretty different.
Well, they're using the same two directors on every project.
Yeah,
so
but the animation directors are different. I mean, you'd be able to tell, like, you watch a random episode of JLU, and you're like, why does that one look like this, and why does the action look like that? And then the next episode looks like completely different. It's because they're using different animation directors, even if Joaquin Dos Santos is directing every friggin' episode, you know. So there's going to be slight difference in style. I'm okay with it because I think Sam Liu is kind of really, really mediocre as an animation director. I've hated everyone he's directed except for All-Star Superman. And Lauren Montgomery is awesome. So you're going to get half awesome and half lame.
I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was CBR who was talking to Sam Liu. Talking about All-Star Superman, he said it was a change of pace because when he did Crisis on Two Earths, it was just all action, action, action. And now with All-Star, he got drama with it. So with this, I'm assuming it's right back to the full-blown action.
Action, action, action.
Right. And like the Arisia being a rookie, Mogos, you know, doesn't socialize. None of this sounds like, you know, it's gonna have any kind of dramatic tension to it. And I think it was Lauren Montgomery who said that this could like be the end of the core and is a big epic story.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of disappointed in that sense that we won't slow things down. Like they're finally telling Abin Sur's story and they're not you know, they're not going to make it dramatic at all. I guess he's just going to kick a few butts and die.
Yeah. Well, there's six stories we know about. There's one that's Avin Sur, there's one that's Lyra, there's one that's Mogo, there's one, the Krona one, the main one, and then there's one with that weird little animated guy we didn't really get a good look at. And
yeah.
I guess there's one more besides that, which everyone says it's probably the Sinestro Corps one, because Sinestro Corps made a cameo.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to be a future thing. But that could just, I thought they were going to, like, copy Tigers, because that's a pretty good Avin Sur story, and Sinestro story, you throw it all together and stuff, but yeah, I'm not sure. But obviously, I think you're right, because they made a point to say, oh, Lyra, we're going to use her, because she's like a martial arts Green Lantern and stuff, and like, oh, there it goes. Oh, you know, they're doing the Ermi story. They're doing the,
The Killua. Yeah, that's right. Chris Samney's art was in,
Yeah, Chris Samney's art. That's right.
Yeah.
I am okay with that. I love Peter's Monsi stuff, and I like
as long as the dialogue is fine.
Yeah. As long as they improve the dialogue.
The problem with the Peter's Monsi story for me was that, at the beginning of the story, Killua was like, what's a poozer? It's like, poozer is a Bolivac's Vic word. Why do you not know what that means? Like, everybody used to call you a poozer on your home planet. You know, it's like Superman being like, what's a Jor-El? You know, it's like stupid.
What's a Jor-El?
Read a book, Superman. Read a book.
He can't. His planet is dead.
That's right. I can't read a book, Eric, you dick. My planet is destroyed. Sorry, Superman. I always forget.
Well, on that note, we're going to move on now. And go on to the full-blown... Yeah, we're going to leave it on that note. I'm actually going to say that Superman's, you know, dying planet. We're going to go into the reviews and the comments that came out. Like I said before, Brightest Day number 20. We're going to start off with that one. The Aqua War is...
Pointless War.
Began and ended in this book, basically.
Yeah, the fight
well, not technically not began, like...
Yeah. The fight for each of the Aquaman miniseries we probably won't be getting until next year. Yeah.
So, as stories go, it's I don't say it's self-contained enough that I don't have that much of a problem with it. It does sort of all get into it, like, just falls into place too easily for my taste. Like, this could easily be spread out to one gigantic storyline, but it doesn't. So it pretty much just boils down to two issues, and pretty much there's your conclusion. And I'm not really that, you know, I'm not as amazingly satisfied with it, but I am not terribly, against how the story ended.
I think
just blows up.
Go ahead, Brandon, sorry.
Before we get all negative with Eric.
I'm not.
No, I agree with Frank. It definitely, like, this whole series had so much potential. I think Jeff and Peter did a great job of introducing villains and into these characters' lives and setting up for so much potential conflict. But the problem was they just kept pushing all that away. They brought it up and pushed it away. And that's what this issue was. Like I've said since the beginning of this, since we started talking about it, that Siren was easily the most interesting character in the series, and they just brushed her away. I mean, we got this great cliffhanger at the end of issue 19 with Aquaman getting his hand cut off, and unfortunately, we didn't get to see anything after that. It's just a bunch of pushing and shoving, and Mera saves the day by splashing water on people who were born in water.
No, she splashed tremendous amount of
people that are
water
born.
On it.
And wait, then, so she's baptizing
and
people?
Then, and she created like aqua tendrils, so technically she did do a lot more than just
dubious,
splash water
on
somebody.
I have some dubious issues with how she quote unquote saved the day there. Yeah, I agree.
Is she splashing money on her face?
It's just because honestly, it's like she's like, I'm gonna use my power weapon. She lifted the whole ocean to make some tendrils come out of it. It's like, why don't you just make the tendrils come out of it? That seemed like a lot of trouble for nothing. And plus, she just threw them off the shore, like a couple of yards, and then let Aquaman.
Well, no, we it's not like we saw the beach in the background when they were underwater. So
you're right. It's completely made. You're right. It's completely unclear where they went actually, which is another problem. But yeah, I think obviously, I think it's. The big problem with this series is, right, that the only story we got any kind of legit payoff for was the Hawkman story. I mean, that story went on and on and on forever. Every single bit was an action beat, and we got every single possible rung of drama we could out of it before it ended. Whereas this is the first story where we see has suffered from the cut of the two issues. It's clear these were written, this was clearly not how Aquaworld was going to end.
They ran out of room.
They threw it together and stuff. And there are some really cool moments. I like Aquaman using the dead sharks, and I like Mera doing something really cool. And, you know, I don't know where the random ass Aqua Girl comes from. That's like an embarrassing character introduction and stuff, but, which just,
well, she's been around for a while. She's
actually
been
around. By the way, I just showed up
with Gleason when he was on the book.
Oh, I mean, in terms of this series, just all of a sudden she's like,
hey, oh, right.
It's ridiculous, you know, and, I just rare week issue in terms of, and I, you know, I hate that I was right, you know, when last week I was saying that this is such bullshit, the whole series leading up and these characters waiting 250 years to get out and attack a couple dudes on a beach and then just die, you know, it was stupid, it didn't go anywhere, it just sets up the next storyline, and how dare you give me 20 issues of a comic where all you do is set up another comic book, you know, it's insulting. There, like I said, there are some cool bits, I didn't hate it as much as I thought I was going to hate it, but it wasn't really much of a war. It was exactly the same action sequence as the first action sequence we got with Aquaman. You know, Mera does a bunch of cool shit with Somali pirates. Aquaman makes a dead octopus attack them. It's the exact same thing. So nothing special happened. And plus, they addressed the major issue where, you know, Aqualad says to Black Manta, how could you do this? They tortured you and your wife. And he's like, I hate people. I hate them. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even answer your question. You're just rambling stuff.
Dick.
Overall weak. I mean, you know, just very sloppy issue. I don't see anybody can get pure enjoyment out of it as much as it really should have been enjoyment. I mean, you know what?
Well, no, you just mentioned all the parts that gave you, it's a balance. Oh, enjoyment. Did you really enjoy feats or Aquaman's feats?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you can't, I mean, there's too much, there's all the stuff that was cool were cool, but it was too many issues along with it. You know, it's like watching, I don't know, it's like a wrestling.
So he's saying you can't get any pure substantial enjoyment, overall enjoyment out of it. There's some cool bits here and there.
Every bit is tampered by something that's kind of like the story itself, you know. And, you know, I do want to say though, Geoff Johns was really, really terrible at endings, especially action endings. So obviously he's being helped here by, Tomasi, I guess, you know, because Tomasi always has really cool action endings. So this is one of the better endings that Geoff Johns has ever done action-wise. But overall,
how about you give the man some credit and not bring Peter into this?
Well, I was going to say, if we're going to go into the Green Lantern, should we go to Green Lantern? I'll say some things I liked about that. But, I mean, come on. Name one story that he had with
Blitz.
That Flash substantial Blitz. Action ending, yeah? Wasn't it just them running around punching each other like it always is? Where do the Flashes run? How come every time they fight, they just run? Where are they running to? Why don't they just stand still and fight? It's not like they can't.
Okay, Eric. Anyway. Eric, that's
where are they running to?
There's at least too much nitpicking into that entire thing that I have to pass it along from you now.
Hey, I'm sorry.
Can I talk?
Go on. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I didn't read that. One point I wanted to mention that was really an irony to me was that how the White Lantern Ring basically mentions, I let Mera's people out. It's like, this is the thing that's supposed to be protecting all life, that life's its power and everything, and it's sending out death armies to kill people.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Did it ever say my job is to protect people?
Yeah, I read.
It's the Ring of Life. It's not supposed to kill people. That's the opposite of what it should be doing.
I think that's supposed to be not, that's honestly
an assumption.
Yeah. That's the twist.
The book, I guess.
Yeah, that's the twist. I happen to think that I don't think anybody in this cast even, and I reread the issues recently, can explain exactly what's happening with the White Ring. I don't think it's at all clear what's going on.
I can try, even though I didn't read any of the issues.
I mean, I just reread all the issues the other day to get myself pumped for the Aquaman story, and I don't know. I can't tell you what happened. I cannot tell you what's going
on. For Aquawar.
I literally can't tell you.
You're like tailgating for Aquawar.
if you look at it in a way, the White Ring is setting itself
I don't want you
in motion.
It, but I'm just,
okay.
No, you know, if you can,
I can actually try. It's setting itself in motion into ways to pretty much to get to the overall bigger picture of things. So technically, it's setting up small little events, small little, things that will occur or might occur or things that it will use to its own advantage. So technically, it's working in mysterious ways, but technically, it's saying, I need to get things done in a fashion that, I don't care what you think is going to happen, it has to happen. So if you have to die get to a specific logical point, it'll happen.
And by mysterious ways, I mean vaporize Aquaman.
Yeah, which is the same thing that any kind of cosmic story always ends. It's always like the big benevolent force is actually kind of malevolent, and then, you know, we'll find out at the end it's actually trying to be benevolent, which is the same thing they're doing in Generation Lost, right? The whole twist that Max Lord is actually trying to, you know, stop all these corrupt forces and really thinks that the, you know, whatever, you know, but whatever. I just doesn't make any sense. What the hell is the right white ring? What is it doing? And it's vaporizing. And I think actually, you know what it is? The big twist with the Hawks, and now everybody's like, are they really dead? I think they're really dead. That's the big twist. And we were all kind of like, no, obviously they're not really dead, and you're foolish if you think so. The kind of like three panels, exact same thing happening to Aquaman at the end of this story is condescending, because it's like, again, the series is telling us, like, the thing that just happened last issue is not as important as you think it is. Don't worry about it, you know? I mean, why are we even reading this?
Good question.
Why are they even writing it?
I don't know. Why are you still reading this?
It's almost done. That's why I'm still reading it.
Well, that's a negative reason why
I'm
still
a
reading it.
That's a terrible excuse.
Hey, what am I going to say?
Well, that's basically it for the people. That's it for the people who actually read the issue of Brian and C number 20.
I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, yes, you did read it.
No, I didn't read it. I didn't. Nope.
No.
I'm just giving a fake.
Okay. Okay, then we're going to move on to Green Lantern Corps number 57. Which pretty much is the, somewhat quote unquote conclusion of what's going on with the Weapon Air storyline. And it's, I don't know. I can honestly say, I'm not really satisfied with the ending. I don't know what to say. It's pretty much, it's a lot of things that happened. A lot of people got, like, you know, murdered or blown up or killed. none of them were important characters. Of course, none of them were important characters at all. There was a bunch of, you know, cannon fodder that died in the course of this entire book. But I can honestly say the ending of it makes me say, what the fuck?
There was, of course, the Firestorm Ex Machina.
It doesn't even count as Ex Machina because it didn't do anything. It's just Firestorm cameo.
He shows up. Like, hey.
He's like, excuse me.
Have you seen Deathstorm? No? Okay, let me help you real quick and then leave.
Have you seen this boy?
He flies fast.
I can literally say this is how much Geoff Johns actually has his hold on Green Lantern Corps. Because something that happens offhand in another book is technically shown in this book. Of course, both of them are the edge of the universe, but technically we didn't even need to see Firestorm at all in this issue.
No, not at all. He just shows up like, he randomly goes, where's the White Lantern? Where's my dad? Deathstorm. And I had no clue what was going on with his part of the story because I'm not reading Brightest Day, and it made no sense to me. And it was just dumb. He's just randomly there.
It's not really clear at all.
I was taking it personally because this was finally a storyline I was following and kind of understanding, and I figured that this was, oh, well, no, we can't have Bing understand what's going on here. Have a random character.
In your face, Bing!
But aren't you reading Brightest Day, though? So you should know what's going on with that, at least.
No, not even reading Brightest Day. You should know what's going on.
Deathstorm in like 7 issues.
I'm still not even sure what Deathstorm is, but so, whatever.
Listen, guys.
Me either.
It's inspiring. Wait. I understand. You know, I don't,
Eric, was it so important to understand?
That you don't need to understand what's happening. You just need to buy it. You know, it's not really anything interesting or going to change your mind about how good or bad the comic is at this point. This, you know, actually, you know what? I thought this issue was pretty bad. I've had a lot of problems with this storyline. But there was things in this issue I liked more than I thought I would. I liked that, Kyle was kind of called out for kind of jumping the gun and bringing Sinestro in, and that it's creating a legitimate conflict between him and Nantu.
That was all narration, by the way. She said that in her head.
It's not a conflict that's made between the two, but it's still like a thought that it's a seed.
No, that's
a
thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. Yeah. I just want,
and that's an interesting conflict.
Call it out.
Yeah. And then I think, on top of that, it seems a little artificial and silly because you kind of, you can say to yourself, like, why did he just go straight for Sinestro? Why didn't he ask his friends to help? And there really isn't any kind of logical understanding, but I don't know. I'm still kind of reeling over the fact that somehow everybody found out that they were related, you know, and that Kyle doesn't care his mother's dead, and little continuity things that, like, it's hard for me to kind of, like, really put anything in context in terms of, like, what Kyle would or wouldn't do in the situation or what would or would be the appropriate thing to do, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm glad that he's framing it this way. I like that he's kind of framing, you know, someone who has a real problem with the way Kyle was treating the storyline, especially by Sinestro. I like that he's reinterpreting what's going on with his story as being about him and Nantu and Sinestro. So I get, at least from his interview and from the end of the story, I get the sense that we haven't seen the last of the two of them conflicting with each other. Who knows? But, you know, you know, hopefully Tomasso will do some kind of, like, you know, Kyle has self-respect and does something to stand up for himself at some point, but who knows. I did like the end with the Weaponer becoming a Sinestro Corps member, because it
really,
yeah, it didn't make any sense in terms of the actual context of the story, because I don't know why that guy is so limp emotionally all of a sudden, but I like him recurring as a villain as a Sinestro Corps member, because, you know, we get another feature Sinestro Corps member who's ridiculously powerful. What happened to the energy? And I like that he didn't just get killed off, you know, or you just escape into the sunset and be like, oh, we'll meet again, Green Lanterns. It's like, ugh, fuck off. You know, at this point, nobody cares about characters that aren't a Sinestro Corps member. So if anything, Vidar's just kind of saying, like, I really like this character and I created him. I want to make sure he stays around for a little while. So you kind of understand why it seems obvious when you think about it that he's a Sinestro Corps member. But, also, again, the art was pretty terrible. And the only thing Kyle did of any significance was shoot a guy in the back. So,
yeah, it wasn't that terrible. There were definitely good points in the art.
Well, again, every time he has Sinestro block a shield and get, like, down on one knee to do it is pretty awesome. But I do want to say really quick that, my favorite part of the issue was when Sornik went down and Kyle pats her head and is like, shh, you rest now. I'll take it. And she's fine. She's just like laying down. He's putting her head on the ground.
I keep you, Sora. Keep you.
And then he raped her.
Whatever. I mean, what are you going to do? You
know, No need for that.
Excited to see what happens in War of Green Lanterns, that this is finally
there's over. Actually stuff,
I'm glad I was right that Tony Bedard has no respect for Kyle. I'm just glad.
Okay. We don't need to, you know, we don't need to have, you know, validation for that, Eric, correct?
Yeah.
There is a point in the story that makes no sense. Again, the introduction of Firestorm itself being in the book creates too much of a problem for me, just for the fact at the end of it, where he says, listen guys, Death Storm's going around, Black Lantern stuff is happening, the end of the universe, I'm gonna go and try to stop that. Everybody else is like, maybe we should help. No, I got this. Okay.
Don't worry about it. He said maybe we should help. It's like, listen, we're too busy.
No, what happened was, Firestorm was flying by, bumped into John Stewart, said, did I just bump into you? John Stewart said, no, not really. He's like, oh, sorry. And then he left.
That's okay, we're both black. Whatever.
Well, actually,
cameo of Vic Rams in this issue.
Again. The only reason they even ignored him was because Gant was like, we don't have time for this. We gotta focus on this issue.
Which is still weird. I mean,
I don't know
remember.
Why Firestorm just randomly shows up. It has nothing to do with this book.
Well, he has reason to show up because he was tracking the White Lantern energy, and the weapon had White Lantern energy on his shield.
Yeah, that makes sense. But then what happened to the energy?
That's not actually worth noting. The Sinestro Corps shield he's showing is not actually his shield, because it was previously shown that the shield was actually knocked out of his hand and outside of the bubble. So that's a construct.
I think my favorite panel. In this is where Arkillo is hitting Sornik Netu, and you see the back, and she is contorted in a way that no humanoid
on a human body.
I mean, technically she's not a human, so I suppose it could make sense. But I don't think
Abin Sur's people don't need heads to think or breathe or eat or live.
Who knows? Their brains could be somewhere else. Whatever. But, like, you know, she's just randomly in this contorted position that no humanoid body should be able to make, and it doesn't make sense.
And you know what? The fight was cool. For the two pages that Sinestro and Warpin are fighting, was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's nice to see Sinestro use scimitars, because we're probably going to get used to Sinestro using scimitars pretty hardcore pretty soon, because he's going to use them in the movie a lot. So.
Did everybody give their thoughts?
Nice to see Kirby dots all over the place also.
Favorite part of the issue? Firestorm actually saying, I gotta bounce.
Bing.
I kind of like Firestorm admitting that the whole truce thing is kind of crazy and doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, he's like, are you crazy? Like, a little bit.
I'm not bound by the truce. And then it goes off panel and suddenly gone.
I ain't bound by no truce, yo. And now I'm disappeared. Did he even use any powers?
I think there were supposed to be pages there and they just, cut them out.
No, there was too much awesome to be contained on the pages.
What a punk too when Sinestro is this that issue where
did he even
where
fight at all?
Where Kyle or Sinestro?
Firestorm didn't do anything, did he?
He didn't do anything. No, what a punk when Kyle watches John Stewart and his guys shoot back Sinestro. He's like, they're actually driving him back. Like, he's excited about that. It's like, you're an asshole, dude. Like, you know, 2 years ago you fist fought him and won, right?
I actually just realized that Firestorm actually did nothing. He just came down there and asked a question and then disappeared and then left.
That's pretty much how all Brightest Day cameos go.
Wow, that's stupid.
Blackest Day cameos.
Well, yeah,
it's the same thing.
I mean, Brandon, did you like every time
I do this podcast, every issue gets worse for me because I read the issue and it's okay.
I gotta hear some positive notes here. I gotta hear some positive
talks, and Brandon, it's bad.
I meant to say something good about it. I like the way the story ended. The end.
Fred?
Yeah. I have a few positive things, I guess.
It ended.
I don't think we should let Eric talk first anymore, because...
Just
Sure. Everybody gets depressed.
Yeah. Right. I must hear. I have to hear nothing but positive right now. So, Brandon, give me the positive.
I thought the art looked good in a lot of places. Like Eric said, the Weaponer versus Sinestro fight was pretty good. There's a panel where I think Sinestro gets hit in the back of the head with a hammer, and it was really good. And I enjoyed the moments where Sora and Nick doubted Kyle. She didn't have a boss to say it on the field, but she's thinking it, and that creates a little conflict. And we've got the War of Green Lanterns coming up, so there's that to look forward to. Yeah, the Firestorm stuff was crap. He did get a few Sinestro Corps members, but
He shot like three or four of them when he showed up, and then didn't do anything else.
It's still pretty random, and it was only used to throw the Brightest Day banner back on the book to justify that.
As if they needed that.
But I don't know. I still get the feeling that I can't remember. Tony Bedard, like, is really enjoying himself. I mean, there's lines that John says. He's like, "We're outgunned. Sound a retreat." You know, he's writing this stuff as John is back in Iraq or something, or in Afghanistan, or somewhere as a Marine. You know, and he's just having fun. It's not supposed to be taken extremely serious. This isn't Peter Tomasi, and I guess we should lighten up and expect a little fun. Like, I don't remember what like the line
was. Apparently either Bat or Nerafino listens to our show because John has eyes again.
I think it's just a close up. I appreciate what Wes is saying, and I think if we just enjoyed it more, we'd enjoy it more. But I don't know. I'm not going to dumb down my opinion. I just don't want to dumb down what I expect from the comics.
No, I'm not telling to shut your expectations to a new low. But
don't expect too much. I think Tony Bedard wrote a really perfectly good comic, and I think if you wrote something that was closer to the Rebels, it'd be great. And I like that he's actually all about fights, because I'm a big action junkie in terms of my comics, so I like that he's got fights all the time. There's just some decisions he's made this storyline that I didn't like, and I don't think he's got a lot of good structure, and that's it, you know, but.
Well, here's the thing. They have a set timeline, because they've got to get to this little mini event that they've got for the summer, or spring rather, and
I'm sure
you could take the Tomasi approach and drag it out with issue by issue of talking and pieces of action, or you could do what Bedard just did and throw action into every issue, and it's just nonstop action, and it doesn't leave enough room for all that dramatic tension that we expected. The Kyle issue, the
story too, because there's no reason you couldn't have told this story in two issues or one issue really, or three issues. I mean, if you want to be crazy, I mean, as much as you can't really complain, because I'm sure if Tomasi was doing it, this would take place over months and months and months, because it would be the Mongol storyline again. But by the end of it, you would have got such an insane amount of epic shit, you wouldn't really complain. Come on, there wasn't really much story here, you know what I mean? That's my problem.
Yeah, you can't go from, we started this arc talking about how there's so much potential for Sinestro and Kyle, and that whole little three-way thing is going to explode, and this is it. We're finally going to get something out of it. And now you're telling me that there's no story here.
Yeah, like, exactly.
The potential is not gone. I mean,
yeah. Well, there. Like I said. Yeah. I agree. I mean, exactly. And that's what I said. I liked about the way the Sinestro stuff kind of ended up.
There was definitely some build up towards Sinestro, because I really got to feel that they're kind of really pushed just what kind of a man he is. At the same time, you see his kind of like almost good side sort of thing going on with John's, and this is more Sinestro as the devil. He's literally tempting this guy to his side.
Not even devil, just powerful. You know, because the last time we've seen Sinestro do anything worth mentioning, he was fighting Hal Jordan and Atrocitus on that planet, you know? And it's like, the last time we've seen him have a balls-out fight, he killed Lara. Like, that was the last big moments Sinestro had. So,
well, we fought Necron, but then it didn't really amount to anything. That's true.
He didn't do anything. Nobody did anything against Necron. It was just a big white light. like, so when I see Sinestro kicking ass and taking names for an entire arc, I'm not going to complain too much because that was the purpose of the arc, was to build up him, build up the Weaponer. And as much as I expected the Weaponer to say, fuck your ring, I'm for my people, it didn't happen, and that's what intrigues me for the next storyline.
Why did he betray?
We can't answer those questions until later on.
Right, but it makes me wonder, is he just playing them, or is he really giving in? He might just be waiting for a good chance to kill Sinestro.
That's possible.
I'm sure
it's going to be something like that at the end, but...
Didn't your boy from Rebels try to do that shit? Use the ring for something.
Yeah, he tried, and the ring ended up rejecting him because of how it was programmed.
Just like ignored Sinestro. Right. That's how people was beaten too, right?
Well, we're moving a little bit too off topic going to Rebels. Yeah. As much as it's a good book, but we're going to move on now to Green Lantern.
I don't have any comments. Whatever.
A good
now we're going to move on to Green Lantern number 62.
Rage!
The conclusion of, famous Cronus little, jaunt on Earth.
Okay, so, I shouldn't go first on stuff because I'm so depressed thing, but, I think if you let me go first on this one, you might be surprised by what I have to say.
I'm already surprised.
Alright, we're gonna start with you, Eric, very much, but,
this is my absolute favorite issue.
What do you think?
Of the comic, this is my favorite issue of the comic Green Lantern in years. Like, years and years and years. I think there was a lot of really cool stuff. I mean, it basically was all fights. And, you know, it's basically people with constructs just blasting energy at each other, and they're all kind of fighting in a 3-foot space, you know. But, and Cronus' characterization is really bad. And I don't want to talk about the stuff that I hate. And the fact that Hal says that Inigo, Atrocitus, and, Larfleas are good guys is unforgivable. I mean, but, there was just really cool bits. A lot of really cool stuff happening. Havoc being wrecked. I think, there's even a good line. I like when, you know, I think everybody loves this part. It's kind of hard to say. I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. Where you know, when, Krona's like, I control willpower, and then Kyle gets a shot.
No, you can literally say it's Kyle, but I won't get that any mention.
It's Kyle. No, when he says I control willpower, and Kyle gets half a shot in, which is whatever, and then he says, who controls what now? I mean, it's good. I mean, you do see a lot of balls-to-the-wall action, and then people are finally calling Hal out for the nonsense that he's been doing this storyline, though it's completely out of nowhere. Some of the art is really uneven, but it's just got so much energy, it's easy to forgive. There's too much happening every page. This is what the whole storyline should have been like, but, and Batman's costume. Which Batman is that? Is that Dick Grayson? Because he's not wearing any
costume. It's supposed to be Bruce.
It says Bruce, right? Because he doesn't wear anything remotely resembling Bruce Wayne's current costumes.
the cover artist got it right. But, not so much for Doug.
Sorry, Doug.
I think Doug did draw the cover.
No, well, he might have drawn one of the alternates.
No.
Maybe it was the middle of the night and these were Batman sitting up with his friend in the hospital jammies. that's all I got for you.
And Batman all of a sudden hates Hal Jordan again, but what are you gonna do?
Honeymoon is over.
It's probably like the most horrifying thing ever to wake up in a hospital bed and have Batman leaning over you saying.
So you wanted to get something comfortable? It's like, he's going to think it's weird if I'm wearing my new costume. I'll wear the old one. With the yellow sun? No, that's kind of bright. He always hated that. Yeah, you're right. It's kind of
Bruce is kind of a dick to him. The first thing he asks is, like, what happens? He's waking up, and then Batman's right in his face. You lost!
You lost.
Wouldn't that scare the crap out of you?
I would shit myself if Batman was in my face
The art seems to get progressively worse.
I think this was strong.
It was strong in the beginning, but like,
yeah.
In the scene where he was with the Justice League, it was like, but the problem is that it's got four inkers.
Well, this one had three, right?
It had three. Well, yeah, because Doug wasn't inking. But like,
I think one of those inkers was just for Hal's bruises.
And the thing is,
Doug gets a break next issue, so he'll be on schedule.
The first few issues, like the first few pages, were like really good and detailed and everything, and then it sort of got like smooth, where like there's no more wrinkles on the face. It was just like everything was super smooth and cartoony looking.
Yeah, there was a couple of bits in the last pages that weren't really good, but I think you can actually see some of the loopiness of the pencils kind of show through. And I think the Ophidian page is actually really cool, that he uses distortion all the characters.
Speaking of which, did Hector Hammond show up last issue, or did he just randomly show back up here?
No, that was just
he randomly showed up in this issue.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And
it's so ugly. Oh my God!
I want to say in terms of story
points, but that's how it's supposed to look.
He's not supposed to be pretty.
Hideous.
Yeah, not a ugly as in Doug can't draw for shit, but no, ugly as in this is an ugly thing to look at.
I'm glad you explained yourself.
He's supposed to be ugly. That's the point.
Yeah. I think I want to say real quick though, before we get into that, I like the implication that they're giving here that the Guardians willingly let him get infected with Parallax. I think that's probably the first Parallax twist I've liked since they've introduced the whole concept.
Kind of dickish, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, yes, obviously. It isn't nice. I agree.
Anyways.
See, I said something nice. This is my favorite.
No, I agree. It's good.
I can agree with you. This issue actually did have a lot of what we've been waiting for in, like, you know, Green Lantern, and Green Lantern alone. It is weird stuff to see, you know, Hal Jordan saying that we're the good guys in a gigantic splash page with Larfleet's Atrocitus, Indigo, and St. Walker all in the background. And I can literally say that even St. Walker, I don't even consider that much of a good guy. He was willing to kidnap a child just so he could, like, be their god. So,
kidnap a child? She gave her ultimate power! How is that evil?
It's evil. I really like most of the characterization of Krona here being more of a bipolar. It's pretty bipolar.
Yeah.
It's like a tripolar.
I really like how
Wine's like Superboy Prime.
I like how when Superman's like, hey, Hal, like you guys, you can't do this alone. They kind of portray Hal as like a drug addict. Like, Hal, when was the last time you took off that ring? I've been working overtime. You know,
I could do it.
Yeah, I could do it.
I want to.
Exactly. I think that's actually a good idea, sort of.
It's a good bit.
If it pays off.
I'm hoping if it pans out, it'll be really good. If they sort of push it as like a sort of drug addict type thing, and make a sort of consequence to even having the ring, and that would actually be an interesting story. I'd like to see how that plays out.
Because it's true. Because if you think about it, all these characters in this room, we've seen their alter egos recently, except for Hal Jordan. The last time we saw Hal Jordan was my moment of the year when Hal talked to Carol in the diner, and that was the last. And you know that lasted for 2 pages.
Yeah. No, exactly. So he's just Green Lantern, and that's. Yeah. And it's an interesting story, and I didn't even think about that kind of thing. That, like, you know, he hasn't been Hal Jordan in months. He's just been Green Lantern.
Yeah, and I also don't like that. I want to say I don't like that Batman brings up the people that were murdered. And he makes a point to kind of talk about, you know, he doesn't. I don't know.
They seem to
dismiss the fact that a bunch of convicted guys got killed pretty quickly. You know,
Batman's.
Well, Hal does. Batman brought it up.
Yeah, no, like I said, I mean, it's better than nothing, yeah.
Batman the jerk.
It's not like Atrocitus is about to go to jail or anything. He's got a book coming out.
It could be a really boring book if it's just him in jail.
I want to see that. I want to read that book. He can still publish it if it's in jail.
I'm sitting there with a construct.
They could always replace him with Guy Gardner. There's no reason to assume that DC isn't lying to us, though I don't think they will, obviously, because they want to keep Atrocitus around because he's going to be
Milligan basically said that Atrocitus will be the star.
Yeah, but this guy who wrote the Steel miniseries said, the Steel special said he's going to fight Metallo and going to be reestablished as a DC heavyweight by the end of the storyline, too. So,
I think it was intended to.
Well, no, been other times. Judd Winnick said a couple times that he said he's lied in interviews and stuff about how storylines are going to end because, you know, he was told to, et cetera, but I don't necessarily, I think you're right. I think mostly because Atrocitus is going to be the main villain of the Green Lantern animated series' first season, so,
you know. I don't think that's true.
You don't need to still be around to promote.
Yeah, no, they're not going to get rid of him this quickly. I don't think they are at this point. I think there's going to be...
Can we visit the Ophidian page for a quick second?
What do you want to talk about? The images he shows everybody?
Yeah. I don't want to harp on how hideous Atrocitus and his family is, but
we have to see him again.
ugly joke.
Forever?
Forever.
Like us, right, Dad? Yeah, forever.
Every time about, I love that every time we talk about Atrocitus' children, we have to mention that. Sorry, continue.
I do want to remind, yeah, whatever. He's also going to marry St. Walker. So.
Yeah, of course.
With Indigo's love life, is this Abensur?
Like, it is.
Right? Yeah, it's supposed to be Abensur, yes.
Well,
I mean, has him with a family.
To be fair, we're supposed
to... I assume you're going to find this out during Flashpoint when the title changes names.
It could, or maybe just wait till the, whatever. I mean, he's obviously got a trilogy of trilogies plan, right?
Yeah, whatever.
Wait, did Hal post the character, or is this wishful thinking?
This is probably, like, you know, some point in time in her past when he did first propose to her.
So he has done that before.
Yeah, he has proposed to her.
Yeah, they've been engaged once or twice. 4 or 5 times.
I don't put them together. I really don't.
Well, the way the story makes it out, yeah, you don't want them together. Their love just doesn't seem to be, true.
It ruins Carol, but otherwise.
Yeah. He won't treat her right.
That girl deserves better.
So, I guess that's it.
Yeah, I guess. Because
we're just starting
this issue.
We're just wavering.
Yeah, no, we don't know what to say because we like it.
Yeah exactly.
I really, really, really like Hal throwing a construct of a battleship.
Yes.
Just say that that's kind of awesome? Also, that who controls what now panel. I just, every time someone mentions something, I flip past it and I have to kind of stop and go, yeah, that's pretty.
I like Larfleet's biting, biting Krona's throat. It looks really brutal. And then
I thought that was atrocious.
He's fine. What did I say? Larfleet? Oh,
yeah, Larfleet. Yeah.
I'm gonna just say the whole thing again. I like Atrocitus biting Krona's throat because then it's like, yeah, I got you this time. And then it's like, ah, no, I'm fine. Forget it.
He took a bite out of crime.
Yeah, it's pretty, a lot of the first beginning pages of this book has been really good. And I can honestly say that, you know, Hal's been making a lot of constructs, during the past few issues. And, I can honestly still say that it's when Eric said Kyle the first time, I actually believed it was Kyle throwing all these things around. Cause every time I see Hal Jordan do anything in most cases, he's just doing like fists or beams or a jet plane for some reason.
Look, cause he's a test pilot.
I'm gonna throw a plane at you.
That makes sense for your character.
Well, he upgraded. He's now throwing aircraft carriers.
Or, you know, Kamehameha waves. But yeah.
This has no effect on how much I enjoyed the issue. But when Hal took off with his little friends, he left his battery. Don't know if he's going to need that.
Don't worry about it. 24-hour charge.
It's safe in Batman's hands.
Why do you think... little bat, you know, effigies around Batman when he was charging. Of course it's safe in his hands.
Yeah, Batman comes back, it's like, where's my lantern? It's like, oh, I've been using it as a nightlight in my cave.
That's actually kind of funny.
Well, I totally haven't been siphoning its energy for my own weapon against you. No.
So I'm assuming everybody checked out the preview for,
War of the Green Lantern.
The movie. The movie, yeah. Like, from
War of the Green Lantern.
Ago. Yes.
Yeah, apparently Hal Jordan's mentally unstable.
Yeah,
Hold on a second. Make sure we're all on the same page here, because most people have been spouting a lot of nonsense. Eric, you meant to say the previews for the War of the Green Lanterns, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Thank you. Alright, so continue what you were trying to, ask us.
I'm assuming everybody looked at the preview for the War of the Green Lanterns,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's what I was asking.
Well, I mean,
in order to incite conversation,
it makes at least now we know that they know that Krona wasn't a midget. So, I guess now we find out what happened that made him.
Except they seem to think that Krona saw the birth of the universe a billion years ago, as opposed to the 3 billion that he actually did. So
whatever.
To bring a greater point into this is the fact that in the first page of this issue, they show a glimpse of Ganthet and Krona back before the whatever point in time that war. Before the shrinkage in the War of the Green Lantern preview pages, where there's apparently chaining someone to like a cathedral or like an underground cavern or whatever. And they're wearing, you know, the White Lantern symbols on their chests. I mean, you can clearly, you know,
yeah, they're retconning that too.
Yep.
Yep.
So apparently, they had control over the white light prior to everyone else, or they worshipped the white light. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would assume worship.
Well, they were trying to protect life, and then they decided, like, you know, screw emotions, we're just will.
There's only one female guardian.
Well, there shouldn't be any.
No, so. Exactly. But there's
no,
only
technically
one.
That's not true, because when they first...
Yeah, no, because they haven't split yet.
They
so.
Should split, but then they shouldn't be little, or they all look kind of little.
Yeah.
Well, no, they're all, you know, the same size, so... No wonder
so,
they don't look little.
Well, no, but
Krona's pre-Guardian.
Krona's bigger than all of them. I don't know. I'm sure we'll find something out, or we won't, because they're just...
It just seems that like, it seems like they're jumping in a very confusing territory, because now we're going back in time to before they were small. Is this before or after the Zamorans became the Zamorans and not Owens?
I don't mind them unifying the continuity, because I like unified continuity. It's just to blatantly ignore so much stuff that causes problems with the rest of the series. It's difficult. I mean,
well, the thing is, they're expecting you to forget what you knew before, and just,
but then right, you still remember to, enough of it know, that you can follow the story.
Well, technically, it's supposed to be for newer readers who are supposed to be like, okay, so this is intriguing to me. I want to hear more and more about it as it is explained to me. Not that you have to go back and read prior issues of when Krona first appeared, or, God forbid, reading Trinity.
That was good stuff. One of the problems with this whole thing is they were supposed to have evolved to the short size. Does Johns not know that you don't just evolve by standing there? You pass your genes down through generations?
Well, no, that they Guardians became inherently immortal, and then they started doing all that stuff they do, so. So
they do, like, once they became immortal, stuff started happening, and they started evolving.
Well, that's when they started emolving.
So immortality means emolving.
Well,
anyways, Captain Jack Harkness.
Yeah, the argument. That is correct.
What?
So can we say that I'm not looking forward to this issue because Ed Benes and Artie and Saif.
Yeah, that's the thing. Why is Ed Benes anywhere near Green Lantern ever?
Pictures. He should get a job at like a newsstand or something. I don't really. This guy needs to stop.
Thank you. For some reason, people disagree with me. I hate it.
Here's the thing. Same reason people
are short.
Vestry, and same reason people like Tyler Kirkham. I mean, I like Tyler Kirkham more than I like this guy, but it's a very specific style that just is not really conducive to reading.
Well here's my problem.
Again, I've read a lot of Ed Benes stuff before.
Which is weird.
I will not make any call as to his artwork on Green Lantern until I see it.
The splash page, the previous splash page says art by Doug Mankey for Dana Passord and Tyler Kirkham. And then two pages later, it says, by the way, Ed Benes drew this.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, my thing is
ignoring you.
Done with the conversation.
No, we're done.
Real quick. Just because I'm really not cool with this. Artian was supposed to be doing Gail Simone's Birds of supposedly big deal Death of Oracle storyline, and he couldn't finish the series. So apparently they took him off that series for this issue because he's not doing shit else. And apparently they've taken Ed off of his DCU, what is it called?
Garbage.
Universal Online? Yeah, that... The game comic, whatever.
Was he drawing that? I thought it was Howard Porter and some other guy.
Oh, he's doing the covers then. Just the covers, I guess.
Yeah.
Howard Porter was drawing...
Howard Porter's the interiors.
He drew one of the interiors so far. Yeah, there's only...
Okay, I knew he didn't draw all of the interiors.
Yeah. Well, so apparently they snatched up two people who sort of, kind of can do monthly books and combined two conflicting styles for this issue. And from what we've seen so far, I'm not going to be a fan of this. But, you know, that's prejudging. Let's not judge a book by its interior.
Yeah, let's not judge a book by the quality.
Wait a second. I'm sorry to say this, Brandon, but I think you just spent 3 minutes judging a book by its interior just to say I'm not going to judge this book by its interior.
What else?
Damn it.
You're supposed to judge a book by its interior. That's the point.
What else?
Forget it. Let's just... Are we done?
I'm really looking forward to the Warless Green Lantern storyline. And even now, with the end of the issue where they're like, oh, we lost Green Lantern, it's obviously, I don't know if they're supposed to be misdirecting us, but they already told us one of the Green Lanterns is going to be a member of the Sinestro Corps, so if it's going to be something besides that, maybe I'll get excited, but other than that.
So, hey, so does anybody else realize that Green Lantern just had the best, you know, intro into this event and nobody expected that shit?
Wait, what?
Wow, that's actually very true. Green Lantern, mm-hmm. Green Lantern ended in a way that pretty much makes us go, oh holy man, we can't wait to see what's gonna go in the world of Green Lanterns. Mm-hmm. While Green Lantern Core made us all go, what is going on here?
Well, I still maintain that.
Hey,
I like Emerald Warriors just
and Emerald Knights, and Emerald Warriors, what I'm saying, and Emerald Warriors
to a
also.
Extent, but you're right, I think it is weird that the best issue of the month was Green Lantern. That's the first time that's ever happened. Yes.
To be fair, I did like Green Lantern Corps, but you didn't let me say anything.
Yeah, but you're also on Tony Bedard's web.
You're a fucking whore.
Hey.
From the guy.
Language.
From the guy who works for Rebels.
Yeah, right.
I did a bad
okay, job. Okay, I'm sorry. You're a fucking night worker. There.
You know, I don't know. You know, in all fairness, Mew, every single thing you like gets canceled, you should stop liking the things you like, I think is what they
Please don't like any of the books I read.
Colton, oh, I love Batman Inc.
Never love Tony, don't never love Peter Tomasi's writing. Ever.
Okay, what?
Are we done?
What is that in the back?
I love Grant Morrison, so I'm safe.
So, go on.
Whoops.
Let me end the show at least.
Sorry, do it.
Alright. Well, pretty much you heard our talk about Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, Brightest Day, all the news that pretty much came out. Hopefully it's pumping you up for the Green Lantern is going to be coming out soon, and for the game, the movie, and so on. So pretty much, you know, tune in next week where we're going to still discuss everything you want to know about Green Lantern, and hopefully we'll see you then. So farewell, and have a pleasant tomorrow.
Night. Come back soon.
Night. Night. Bye.
Dying of fire.
I'm still trying not to say goodnight anymore.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening and check us out next time. And please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Don't forget to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at KirbyCracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/Roy Clark Method.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me and says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong. And don't make us wait for too long.
What's that ruffling sound?
Candy?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not me.
Certainly not me. I'm sitting on my remote, so I don't make any noise. I don't want to get yelled at anymore.
I'm certainly not opening a package of peanut butter crackers, if that's what you're asking.
God, just don't do it near your fucking mic, man. Yes. How many times I got to tell you?
I was like a foot away from it.
You clearly were. Mute your goddamn mic.
It's not that hard to mute your mic.
2011. I don't even get mad at your recast. I'm about to.
Anyways.